Everybody, welcome to Real Life Sci-Fi with Wade and Willie. I'm Wade.
I'm Willie.
This is a podcast about the paranormal and contemporary mythology. Join us on patreon.com/reallifesci-fi for access to 2 bonus episodes a week, video feeds, and more. Visit reallifesci-fi.show for all the links. And no producers, right? That we did that last week. We got a new producer last week.
No,
we
new producers,
happy.
But thank you for
supporting
us. We were
so happy. I think his name was Josh.
Todd.
Oh, that's what I was taught. So go to patreon.com/reallifesci-fi, become a producer, buy us a drink. We shout you out. Let's welcome aboard the SSRLSF. It's production designer for the upcoming movie Strange Darling. I'm hearing it's directed by Giovanni Ribisi.
He was the cinematographer.
Oh, what? Okay, we got to talk about this. And she's the author of the self-help book for sociopaths. It's called Tips for the Dark Art of Manipulation. It's Priscilla Elliott. What up?
Hi. Happy to be here with you guys.
Thanks for being here. So your production designer, I looked through your credits and there's big ones on there. So you're a big timer. It's weird that you're working on this movie and you're promoting it, because I always think production designers are like, whatever, there's another one in the books. But what about this movie is are you so happy about?
Well, I mean, two things. I mean, one is the bigger movies I've done, I was an art director. So I was kind of in the support capacity. And so this is one of a kind of
production designer. I'm sorry to interrupt. Is above art director?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So art director is kind of like the Robin and production designer is Batman. So I'm kind of just, I've done about 6 movies in the production design position now. And I was really just thrilled to work with a crew that was so into cinema. And everyone was just go for broke. And it was very outside the big machine. It was really small and really passionate. And it turned out, I mean, it's just awesome. So it was one of my favorite movie. I've worked on 40 movies and it's probably one of my favorites. So
it's great to work on something that you like, because it's just so rare. I don't know if a lot of people know the difference in the regular world. The production designer came on.
I'm in this world and I don't know the difference. Yeah. So like, if you please explain it if you can.
Well, it's just sort of, I mean, it's kind of it's a guild, right? So the art department, you kind of have the same directive of building the sets and building the backgrounds or everything that's out of focus in the movie. and the head of it is the production designer, who interfaces with the producers, directors, cinematographers, and then the art director is kind of like the person who makes it happen and deals more with the construction crew and the paint crew and the greens crew.
But early on, there was not a production designer credit. So this came on a little later.
It's great inflation.
Realize.
Yeah. I mean, early on in the 30s, the art director ran the camera department. The art director ran everything that wasn't the actors.
Wow.
The director. So there was an art director and a director. And so it's changed over, as things have changed.
Yeah.
I mean,
my favorite tidbit about production designer is they can override wardrobe, because the look of the movie is very much wardrobe too. It'd be hard to do, but it can happen.
Yeah, when's the last time you tried
it's collaboration. So a great thing about Strange Darling, I would say, is that we all had like a kind of mission statement that we could all follow. So no one was overriding anybody else. Mm. And one was very literal. It was like every color in the movie that we can, I mean, it's a real life world, but everything red, blue, yellow, primary colors. And then the sort of poetic mission statement was, it should look like blood on a flower bed, whatever that means to you. So there's this sort of fairy tale, magical vibe to it. So the costumer knew that. I knew that. I mean, everyone was able to get on the same page. So you weren't overriding.
Yeah.
Such a strong kind of mission statement that we could all follow and it had creativity in it and imagination in it, but it was also pretty clear. So
I want to talk about your book also, but how's Giovanni? What is his deal? He wants to shoot now?
He's an amazing cinematographer. He grew up on film sets and, you know, was a child actor. He's been on, you know, worked for all the best. He's seen everybody do their thing. He's very smart. He's got a whole, we shot on 35mm. He's got like a whole museum of film and cameras and lenses. And I mean, it's a passion that he's had for a long time.
So he's a camera nerd. He's like a dork.
Yeah. He's a camera nerd. And I appreciate it because I feel like, you know, I came into Hollywood as a writer and then I got into the art department and everyone's like, oh, well, art people don't write. And it's like, well, says who? Why do we all have to be in these like seventh grade little pockets? You know?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Him, everyone's like, oh, well, how could an actor be a DP? It's like, well, why not? I mean, so I think it was really brave and he did an amazing job. And
that's cool. Did he talk to you about Scientology?
No.
Okay.
No. That's private. That's whatever.
I know. I feel bad because I always wanted to like Giovanni and then I didn't realize that his mom is like the head of that, or one of them. She's high up.
I mean, it's not, you know, when you do art, you work on the project at hand. That's like, are you circumcised or, you know, I mean, whatever. It's your private life and I don't know.
No, it's good to hear. I just thought, I don't know.
He's great. He's a great person and conscientious. He was up, honestly, while we were scouting, like already scouted by the time I got up. Dressed to the nines, like already seen it all with JT, and JT's the spearhead. I mean, he, you know, Giovanni's famous, but JT, the director, was really the one who made it all happen and was such a mensch and a gentleman to everyone and kind of cheerleader for cinema, you know, and it was a wonderful experience. Yeah.
And it's what, like semi-independent? I mean, or like, how do people, it's called Strange Darling. How do people?
It came out in the theaters. It was in like 1300 theaters for like 3 weeks.
Oh man, I'm sorry. So this is something I should be aware of.
But it's going to start streaming in like a week, on Apple Plus and Amazon everywhere.
Perfect. It was good timing.
It was produced by Miramax and then Magenta Light picked it up as a distributor. So it's got some support, which is great.
It's got a 7.5 on IMDb, so that's good.
It's got 95 on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, that's great. That's great. Let's talk about your book, though.
Yeah.
The Dark Art of Manipulation. What's the subtitle?
The Sociopath's Guide to Getting Ahead. So basically, my kind of umbrage at the self-help genre is like, everyone's like, how to get what you want because you fucking want it, no matter who or what stands in the way. So like how to, you know, just do the Amy Cuddy starfish so you feel powerful, or learn how to like get one on the sly. But it's always couched in like, it's a good thing, right? It's a good thing that I can get what I want, even if it fucks you over.
Right.
And so I was
right.
Like, well, what if we just call it what it is? Self-help genre is how to be a sociopath. How to get ahead in corporate America is be a sociopath. So I thought it would be.
You got to brainwash your mind to not care about the things that are taking you down.
Yeah,
I mean, I always thought Win Friends and Manipulate People was like such a ballsy title.
Win Friends and Influence People.
I thought that was a comedy version.
Oh, well, I guess
I just dialed in.
You can
glean exactly
what I inferred from that book. Yeah. I mean, that's like, so
that's exactly like the thing. Yeah.
I'm like obsessed with sociopaths because I've been burned. And I don't know if these are sociopaths or if they just don't have empathy. I mean, I'm really interested in your book. Is it actually, did you study sociopaths or did you just write it in the most jaded voice that you could?
I mean, I read hundreds of books about sociopaths and self-help books. And then I wrote it in the you form. So the second person.
Uh-huh.
So it's kind of got this greasy, like, well, you know, you want to get that thing, right? So if you just do this little thing, you could probably get there. So it's like a practical satire, if you will. It's actually weirdly useful and creepy.
It's kind of great. I'm going to read it.
Awesome.
Is there an audiobook?
No.
If you could pick anyone to read the audiobook, who would you
get? Oh my gosh.
Would it be like a kind of Alec Baldwin smarmy, or would it be
Sam Rockwell?
I love Sam Rockwell. Sam Rockwell. Really? Really?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, great.
Because he's kind of nice. Or,
well, he's got that like...
He's got some like sexy raspiness that,
I love Sam Rockwell. Even if he's... he always does the same dance in every movie. Have you seen a lot of Rockwell movies always doing the same dance?
He is. But he was, and I love that movie, Seven Psychopaths, that he's in. I mean, that's just one of the funniest movies I've ever seen.
I don't know if I watched it.
Oh, you got to get on that.
Okay.
I haven't seen it.
It's like Tom Waits has like a passel of pet bunnies in it. It's thing.
Okay.
These are lost treasures.
Let me ask you this though, because I've always wondered this and I've probably looked it up a couple times on the show. Can you succinctly tell me what the difference between a sociopath and a psychopath is?
Well, I can't, because it's kind of not a thing. So
these are like made up, right?
Yeah. I mean, so like the whole, I mean, what I did is I was like, look, sociopath, psychopath, narcissist, like they're all, it's the same, like,
right.
Don't feel empathy. So people say like a psychopath is someone who kills people and a sociopath is someone who just gets rich, but that's not scientific. So,
I'm right. They're all kind of the same.
They're all kind of the same. Yeah.
They're all kind of the same.
Fuck. That's how I took it. I was like, because at first I got all worried and I was like, oh, this is a psychopath. This is like, it's all the same. It's all the same day.
And we're all consistently trained to be that way without knowing it, just from.
Yes.
You know, we allow, I always bring up corporations, but you're a corporation. As long as you're making money, nothing matters. You know,
yeah.
Break some rules, pay off some fines, and you're fine. Keep going.
Yeah.
Kill some people and the fire in California.
Ask permission. Yep. Oh, we got caught. Oh well, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but I think it's very deep in our culture. So.
Well, we're on the same page about where society stands. What were you thinking?
My little side note that I was kind of working on is like, well, why don't we make a corporation of the people? Because unions keep failing us. So let's make a corporation of the people. But who, you know, it's very tricky. I don't know.
Who's like going to be the boss?
Well, yeah, right who's now, it's be the me. Boss? Right now, it's me.
Oh, it's you.
There you go.
Name a surrogate that you would have run it in case you don't have the name recognition.
Right. Sam Rockwell. That's a great, someone that everybody loves. Someone that people Tom like, Hanks. Whether they.
Tom Hanks. Well, but then you get the adrenochrome rumors and pedophile stuff.
I know. Right? And I think that those numbers are actually probably smaller. It's just pushed, right?
It's just a topic you don't want for your new corporation. You don't want that. You should go with like, my favorite's Matt Damon, but then he did that Bitcoin thing. Who's squeaky clean that you could get? Ruffalo?
Why do they have to? But that's the thing. Then squeaky clean, that puts all of us late nighters out in the cold. So I don't know. I don't know if the people president gets to be like a square right? guy.
What's late night people?
Well, you know,
just us, the types on the edge.
Yeah, like what is it like? Squeaky clean gonna be like? Was that like Law and Order for the people? Like everyone
in bed right.
by 9.
Right.
Yeah,
oatmeal for breakfast. I mean, come on. I would nominate Sebastian from the Viagra Boys to be the president of the people.
What's Viagra Boys?
Like the best band in the planet out of
this is a
Sweden.
Current band?
Yes.
Okay. And Sebastian is the
lead
guess
singer.
Saxophone. Oh, okay.
There is a saxophone player. They live in Sweden, but he's from Texas, but got run out of the U.S. for some felonious things.
Oh
so
no!
Yeah. So
this sounds great. The Viagra
yes.
Boys.
I'm gonna check it out.
Boys.
It's an S, yes. not a Z, right?
An S. Yes.
Yeah.
Not
that would be like a 1984 version.
Z would be an American-made band.
Yes.
It was 30 years ago.
Electric Pink.
All right. Well, we do something here on the show that I warned you about called the Wow Scale. Okay. It's a five-question quiz. It stands for Waiter Willie. Wow Scale.
Are you a Wed or are you a Willie?
At the end of the five questions, I will give you a score anywhere between 0 and 5. If you're more of a 0, you're more of a Wade. If you're more of a 5, you're more of a Willie. Are you ready to be Wade on the Wow Scale?
Okay, let's see.
First question, three-parter. Do you believe in aliens? If so, have they visited Earth? If so, have they visited Earth in the last 300 years?
Yes, no, no.
All right. Okay. I kind of know how the rest of this is going to go. The first question is very telling. Ghosts.
I've definitely had a few experiences when people close to me have died, and I've had some sense of a message from them a couple times in very strange ways. I also had a crazy apocalyptic dream of New York City drenched in blood the night before 9/11 that I actually called people about and told them, like, it was horrific. And it was, one of the most upsetting dreams I've ever had. And that just happened. So I know those things happened, but I don't think, my father died a year and a half ago. I don't think he's got a ghost around. I'm in my house where I live. There was one of the kids here was possibly murdered. I don't feel like there's anybody here. So I haven't been to a place that I think is haunted, but I think there is some possibility of a transfer, maybe at time of impact. I mean, there's a psychic transfer that's in the, like a mycelium in the world that energy, like cell phone energy, can cross. But I don't think there are like Victorian people walking around like, oh, hey, I'm looking for Billy Bud, but I have had flashes of like, I don't know what's going on, that were very, very intense.
I'm thinking it's a no.
I agree.
All right. We used to ask about psychics. You believe in psychics, but you think
like tarot card readers or.
Yeah. I mean, there's the people on the street, but like just as an ability, do you believe?
Yes, I would say yes. I think there are people who are extreme sensitives that pick up things that most people don't. I don't know if it's supernatural, but I think, yes, there are people who sense the zeitgeist, sense the undercurrent. I think there is an undercurrent and some people tap into that. So if that's a psychic, then yes.
Okay. What about Bigfoot?
That'd be a yes. Well, living in Oregon, we got to get scratchy on this. No, I don't believe in Bigfoot.
Just for tourism.
There's a lot of bumper stickers on Subarus here.
I know.
Bigfoot.
Why are they all on Subarus? It's so weird.
Wow. It's a great vehicle out there.
It is a good, it's a quality vehicle. We are sponsored by Subaru. Illuminati. You believe in the Illuminati?
Well, let's break that out a little bit. What were there the Knights, the Templar Knights back in the day? Who were the Masons? I mean, do they have? I think
so. The question, if you front load it like that, the question would be: did these people grow and grow and grow their secret societies to the point where now they control world governments?
No, I think there were people, involved in these things. But no, I don't think there's a secret cabal of Illuminati.
Okay, what about the multiverse? You believe in the multiverse, not the Marvel one, but just the idea that there's different universes and we can't cross over, or can dimensionally?
Yes. Like string theory. I mean, physics has got it written all over. Studying the philosophy of space and time in college, I'm convinced that, there could be any sort of... I just think, I mean, in terms of what's out there, I'm like agnostic. There could be all sorts of stuff. The alien thing, my main basis is like, they're not into Earth. They're not coming down here, reflecting our fears and hiding out in caves and like... wanting our water or our blood, but there could be all sorts of God knows what out there and all sorts of time streams. And like, so yes to that. So I hope I'm a confusing testee.
You're not super confusing. You are like around a 2. So you're more of a Wade than a Willie, but I actually agree with everything you're saying. And Willie probably does too. And the scale is just kind of arbitrary. So, Willie, hit us with the topic.
Tonight on Real Life Sci-Fi, is there proof of advanced technology in ancient Egypt? One of the most compelling pieces of evidence for their sophisticated technology can be seen in the intricately designed bowls and statues that have survived thousands of years. These artifacts showcase the mastery of stoneworking, precision carving, and intricate detailing that were far ahead of their time. Were they more advanced than we think? Find out tonight on Real Life Sci-Fi.
Oh, another Egypt thing, huh? So,
yeah.
So they had good bowls?
One of the things going on that people have been studying of, I mean, for a while now, but a lot of these vases and bowls that they say were pottery, using stone that they're so hard that we really can't work with them the way
like
that you would
chisel
work
into a form that would be usable like that.
Yeah, and one of the big telltale signs of most of these things, and I'll pull up some pictures. It might be clunky, but dynasties of Egypt lasted so long that I feel like what happened was they had an ancient history, and they tried to preserve some of those artifacts and some of the pyramids and whatnot. And we attribute these devices and artifacts to them, but they were actually just holding on to them. That's the overall idea.
They inherited them as we.
Yeah. Yeah.
Got it.
And so you can tell the difference in some of the bowl making, but they're studying them with really advanced technology right now. There's this guy out there, Ben Van Kirkwick, I believe. He's an independent researcher. He created the Uncharted X. He's been focusing on ancient engineering, precision, and technology. And he was working with this guy. I don't know the guy's name, but he was the son of Christopher Dunn. This guy wrote, his father wrote some books on ancient Egyptian technology, but he's a professional metal.
Metallurgist.
That's it. I couldn't say it. I spelled it wrong on this.
too many syllables. Metallurgist.
And you know, he works for Rolls Royce, and they're using like really expensive machines to study these ancient bowls. And
why
they're saying
Rolls Royce?
He works for them. Yeah, yeah.
Who's studying the things?
The guy who works for Rolls Royce.
Oh. Got it.
He's a professional metallurgist.
Metallurgist.
Wait, before you continue, do you know anything about this? Have you read about this? Like, what are your initial thoughts before Willie gets too deep?
Oh no, I'm interested because I think you know, I've been as a builder and my job and everything. I'm done a lot of research on people who built cathedrals, and they had like 300 years of people just dying and handing off the stuff to their sons. I mean, people do amazing things with ancient technology. And so I think electricity's only been around for like 150 years. People have done incredible things. We just have a different kind of intelligence now. So I was just wanted to hear about these bowls.
Yeah, and I'm glad you said a different intelligence, because I feel like there is a lost intelligence of a different technology. You can't say if it's better or not. We've been trying to find proof of this technology, because a lot of people just say, they made some bowls. It's just pottery. They just chiseled it. Well, with these tools, you cannot be as precise to the degrees that these bowls are. So, so these are kind of like the smoking guns to the idea that they had some kind of machines doing this. We haven't found these machines. We don't know what they're made of. Somehow they lost in time.
I don't want to cut you off at the knees, but like, couldn't they have just sanded it? Just taken years and years to just like sand it down.
Everyone who works with these materials say that it's impossible. And so that's why, let me pull up some pictures and we'll just run through some pictures, right? Because
okay.
Like with modern day technology, we can't do this.
We can't, like some of the statues are saying now, they're like, well, you can't do this by hand because they're so precisely exact.
But like here, just to drop while you're putting that up, just to say like back when the early telescopes were being made and like being carried up by mules up to Mount Wilson and stuff, people were polishing those lenses with diamond dust on their finger, like by hand, can get crazy precise. So that's a lost art, that they would literally polish a lens looking at outer space with their finger.
And in the same vein, like when they say that, oh, we've lost the technology to go to the moon, they mean all of these old space shuttle pieces that these companies don't exist that made these parts. I was like, well, there's whole companies that would supply parts that we just don't make anymore. So, I mean, here's an example of a statue. The faces are precise. And if this was modeled after a specific pharaoh, there's no human face that is symmetrical, but all of their statues have perfect symmetry. A lot of people are saying, well, this was not modeled after a person, or if it was, maybe half.
But that's beside the point, right? I mean, like, the point is that they're measuring very precisely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That they're, you know, of course, you know, they've got their geometry and their, yeah, precise measurements. But to do this by hand today, I don't want to say it's impossible.
It's probably not impossible, but it's, yeah. Well, it's also just kind of like,
it's impressive.
It's impressive. And it's like, okay, why? What, like, why put that much work into it? You know what I mean? Like, when the guy didn't even look like that.
This is a bowl found in Saqqara. So like this bowl balances on a single point. If this were made by some kind of lathe, something that spins metal that we, you know, something we use today, or stone, it would be hard to add these handles on here.
Like, it doesn't get soft, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I because I'm like, we'll just stick some handles on it. But it's like, how?
It's carved out of a stone. I mean, if you look at, though, I mean, if you look at what the Greeks were doing, or, I mean, sculptors can do crazy stuff. I mean, hands in water. And I mean, the human eye and the human hand with touch, I mean, you could carve it by hand if you were that careful and that meticulous. I mean, again, going back to the diamond powder on a thumb, I'm not seeing how it's impressive, but I don't see how it's necessarily something that was more precise than a human.
What they're saying is, like, even the flatness of this vase or bowl or whatever is something that is almost unachievable by hand. It's within like 13 thousandths of an inch of how flat this is. This is supposedly a statue of the pharaoh Khafre, who is credited to building the pyramid. This stone is called diorite. On this hardness scale, it's a 6.5. Steel has a hardness of 5.5. Bronze is 4. Copper's 3. And I don't see what diamonds are. I can look it up. But
10, with, man.
With the tools that they
hardest thing in the world, diamonds.
Say made this. So they found some like copper and bronze tools. Like, oh, that's what they carved this out of. It would be impossible to carve this stone with those tools. So what they're saying is the tools that they found were the tools of that time, but this was made thousands of years earlier. Bronze has a hardness of 4. This is 6.5. Like, it'd be like trying to carve a piece of wood with a
jelly bean.
No, the jelly bean. Exactly. maybe a Snickers. The pyramid was credited to Khufu because within the pyramid, there's some graffiti on the wall that says that it was
Khufu's
pyramid. There's no writings that says that it was his. And same with this statue, too. If you see this statue, it is a polished diorite. It's shiny. But if you look at these hieroglyphs right here on the floor, these are the ones that say Khafre. And these are not polished. And these are clearly made with another tool.
So does that mean some vandal came in and like, is this even Khafre, or is this some other guy and they just like put Khafre on there?
See, I think when Khafre was around, he basically took credit for everything. This is a statue of me. This is my pyramid.
What's the answer, I guess? Like, what's the machine? I know you don't have the answer, but that's the question, right?
I think it has to do with sound. I think you can like liquefy stone with sound. And I think that they just had different techniques that were lost in time. I want to bring, we did a topic on this before, but this is the schist disc. This is in a museum. They don't know what this is. Some people think that this is some kind of machinery that we just have no idea. It's a part of something that, I don't know, maybe it helped cut the stones for the pyramid. Maybe it like bent sound in a way. I don't know. But this thing's just kind of lost in a museum and they don't know anything about it.
But it's also not really important what it did, right? Because like, is it made of the same stuff?
I don't know what this is made of, but it's definitely like a hard stone.
I mean, it's definitely like something I couldn't make.
I'm not saying everything needs to be technologically advanced. This could like spin popcorn over a fire to you know.
I feel like when we talked about this the last time, I feel like it couldn't be more obvious that you loop some kind of rope or twine around it and then you spin it to make a
knitting around a tree.
Yeah. That's what I think it is. I think it's some kind of textile machine.
It's cool. I mean, it's gorgeous. Wow. Well, I will say I worked on a movie recently. I guess I don't know what I can't say about it, but I did a lot of research about sound, what the MK Ultra people were doing with sound and the attempts to make sound weapons and to kill people with sound. And there was like a whole sound research of the Nazis had like a giant sound cannon that they built and they like kind of don't work. Like,
oh, really?
No one's been able to create. I mean, it's kind of in the same world as like the laser, like this idea that you could have a non-particulate lethal device. Objects explode other objects or crack other objects or carve other objects, but waves, whether lasers, light, sound, like they haven't gotten to a point where there's a way to actually do damage or incisions beyond very minor. I mean, you look at what laser surgery is like, burning is what it's doing. It's not, the light isn't cutting something. It's putting a heat source onto something that needs to be burned away.
Right.
So the idea that like sound could carve a statue, I'm just going to say, I can't buy that one. Sorry, Willie.
No, that's fine. Cause I don't have proof of it either. You know, but here's a better zoomed in picture of, these are the hieroglyphs that say Khafre, and they do not match even the polish of the toe next to it. Uh-huh. Is, you know,
what happens when you get the same density of materials? Like if I have plastic and I'm scraping plastic against it, the one that I put the most force on is going to win, right? Like I'm going to be able to scratch plastic with plastic, aren't I?
But can you?
So could it just have been a pin made out of, what'd you call it? Do it right? Diorite?
Diorite, yeah.
Diorite?
Diamond is 10.
Yes, nailed it. Or a diamond, I guess, right? Like, I don't know. I think like the whole premise of this is like, we can't do this stuff now. Do you ever think that it might just be because it was like, that's hard and it's foolish to try? And we learned that when the Egyptians made their statues and bowls or whatever out of this stuff, it's just like not a good material to like work with. I just think maybe that bowl that you showed us that's like perfectly balanced and stuff could have been like a lifetime of work for somebody.
Well, so just to interject one thing about, I'm sure you know this, but like about the Egyptians, right? I mean, it's like maybe this is as important as them going to space. Like they believed that if they could preserve the pharaoh, if they could preserve everything, the Nile wouldn't change its course. Everything's perfect. So this idea of perfection of the tomb, perfection of the mummification, perfection of keeping anything from moving ensured their prosperity. And that was like a very high importance to their culture. And they didn't leave a lot of notes. They didn't really write the Greeks wrote a lot of shit down. They didn't write stuff down. So we don't know. But we do know that the idea of stopping time was like a paramount importance. So if you had an artisan who was paid, space money to make a bowl that was perfect, and you had him teach his son who taught his daughter, who however you want to go down the line, it could have been something that was of high importance and sacred that you would have the time and the expertise to do this perfect thing your whole life. And it seems trivial to us now, like, oh, it's just a bowl. But if it meant making sure the Nile's going to flood exactly the same time next year, it's worth a lot. I mean, you know, if you focus the best and brightest of your generation on making a bowl, you know?
Right. And then we also, just find it and we're like, what's up with this bowl? It's great. How'd they do that?
I'm going to put my car keys in it.
Yeah. Where's those flyers? We throw all the flyers in there and in our car keys. And meanwhile, this bowl was made by 200s worth of years of people.
Yeah.
I mean, if I could come up with my hypothesis, it would be something along those lines.
I think you're right. And I think that takes all the fun out of it. And I agree with you.
Sorry.
But Willie, what is the fun version? Like, are people coming up with like machines, creating machines?
Well, and rightly so. You know what I mean? Like if you don't have the technology coming up with stuff, all of a sudden you're in this conspiracy realm and you're speculating on how and why, and then that everyone just drops off, you know? So I get it. That's what I do.
Let's just say from now on, yes, if you had enough time to do any of these things by hand, you maybe could, but
they're hella impressive.
They're still super impressive.
They're amazing. Absolutely amazing.
This is a piece of core that they think proves that they at least had tubular drills. And so
I can see the ribs on there.
You see these striations on here, mm-hmm. and you know, you drop some diamond powder in there and then spin the thing and you could cut the core out, because they don't know how they cut perfect circles and out of granite. But somebody found this thing, Petri. They had some kind of machinery, and then, you know,
mm-hmm.
precise kind of drill.
Yeah.
It's like it gets cored out, and that's what this thing is left over.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the question is, how advanced were they? Right. I mean, that's kind of, what we should be talking about is and then was this drill powered by steam or kinetics? You know, like,
so picture
if you had a circular diamond drill and you're in ancient Egypt, it's kinetics, right? You would set up some kind of system of pulleys and levers and
ropes.
Like picture the schist disc holding the drill on it, and then you just spin it, whether you have a rope on it or spin it by hand, you get the diamond powder, like that thing I think could be a core drilling drill.
That's not bad, and it combines our two theories, because you wrap the rope around those openings and you just go for a spin, maybe, right?
I definitely think that there's some kind of power that was lost in some way. And I think that.
Because Priscilla, you said then the Nile won't change course and stuff like that. The predominant theory that Willie has is the Nile used to go under the pyramids, and then that somehow gave them a form of power. But
the Nile ran right next to the pyramids. So the water from it created tunnels underneath the pyramid that still exists today, and that when you have running water, you can it creates energy, and you could collect it by either obelisks or, you know, they say that Tesla's free energy device has the exact same plan, map, drawing of the pyramid, but it requires running water underneath it. But the running water under the pyramid does not match when they say the pyramids were built, so that theory has a lot of loopholes with regular archaeology.
But is the theory more recent than what you think it is, which would help your theory that like these things were built using some kind of water power?
I mean, in my mind, it's the same time. I feel like all the obelisks that you see everywhere.
Well, let's forget about time. Like, how would water? Can you? I don't know if you can describe how their power. I guess you can't, right? Because like it's mystical to you, right? That water was under the pyramids, and then that somehow gave them some kind of power.
The bad parallel is, let's say you have an electrical cord with a current running through it.
Mm-hmm.
You can measure on the outside which direction the current is going, because the energy going this way has a circular energy on the outside that you can measure. So you can tell which way the current is going and how much is in there. And so with running water, they say that there's some energy that you could harness, but it'd be like the bad parallel is like collecting electrons off of static electricity, you know, that there's.
So it's a water mill only. They're not using the water. They're using the stuff that the water is made of, kind of.
Somehow the energy created from it moving.
And the reason that that could have gone extinct is because who knows if that's the size of an Energizer battery. You know what I mean?
Like we can measure the energy of running water from in the way that I'm trying to describe and doing a bad job above, but we don't know how to harness that.
Yeah. And I'm just saying it could be obsolete, but the whole thing is like, how advanced were these guys, right? Like that's kind of what we're.
Yeah.
How advanced do you think they were? I mean, like the sort of baseline understanding of these people is that they were more advanced than we know of, and we don't know how. Do you guys think they had like cars? Do you think they had like some kind of a car that went from one pyramid to the next?
I do think that the technology of the ancient world is similar enough to say that maybe this was a global, that they shared global information, that they could go from continent to continent.
Before I dive into that, Priscilla, like, where are you at with this? What do you think? Like, I guess now the goalpost is we're working under the assumption they had some kind of machines to do these things. What do you think of the water explanation? Do you think that they figured out something about water?
Well, I mean, it's interesting because looking at the super hard stone, I was thinking about the, you know, water jets, water drills that people use to, you know, blow, you know, use sand to blow through steel. I mean, if you can get water at high enough pressure, that was one thing when we were looking at the statue, I was thinking, well, maybe it's a some kind of water jet that could cut into the stone because it's this rat-a-tat-tat of particles that can through.
Yeah.
So if they had some technology with water, I have no idea how they'd get the power to run water at that much compression to make it work like that. But it is an interesting addition. The water part of it.
But you're off on the sound waves thing because you did some research and sound waves have.
I think sound waves is not a thing. I mean, I did a lot of research about it. Again, with the CIA, with the Nazis, and I would say, wave force, like except for burning, doesn't really like the whole idea of like, oh, it's going to be Star Wars, and we're going to like the way that all the Iron Dome and all this stuff like is able to scramble. They're able to scramble the electrical systems on the missiles, right? It's not that they're like
shooting
lasers
are
blowing, you know. So they can't actually take anything out. You can't shoot someone with a laser. You can't shoot someone with sound. You can't carve a statue with sound. I think that was a dream. At least from what I'm not an expert.
Yeah, yeah.
I just did like movie research,
sure.
But that's my understanding of it. It was very popular, and we had all sorts of giant speakers that we built all over the place to try it out. It's not a nuclear device, right? Nuclear is like it's particles that are going to go out and create great heat and force. If you don't have an object, it just doesn't do a thing. So
okay,
doesn't have mass.
What about then? Let's remove destruction from.
Okay.
The conversation, like, okay.
Okay.
So you can't use sound waves to like cut an intricate statue of a man. But
yes,
there's an old story that we've talked about for years on here about the pyramids in Florida or something. Willie can correct me, but like he supposedly used sound to levitate pieces to create what he was going for. Like he was. Willie, help me out if I'm not doing this right. But like,
yeah. This guy who built the Coral Castle in Florida, he claims that he figured out how they built the pyramids, and he would not tell anybody how it was done. And semi trucks would drop off gigantic pieces of stone that then he would unload by himself. And he'd just tell everyone, I'm not unloading it until everybody leaves. And some kids saw him one day unloading this. I don't know if it was day or night. And they said that he had some, looked like he had some ice cream cones in his hand. And so everyone just laughed it off. And, but what some people think is that he had some kind of device that could focus sound energy. So he built this gigantic castle using gigantic stones without any machinery. And he died with his secrets because nobody would pay him for what he wanted.
So just based on that, like, and I know you haven't done any of this research, but like just presented with that, do you think that sound waves could sort of like levitate things or like use their power? I mean, wow. I don't know. What do you think?
Cool.
So he built all this by himself. I don't know what kind of stone that is, but
it don't matter.
You know, coral. Big, heavy pieces.
Heavy.
Yeah, right.
Heavy. I was just in Rockport, Mass, where they, you know, where the big quarries are. And they were talking about moving stones. Again, they cut them by hand. They had this little thing called the feather and wedge, which is like drill a hole in the granite and you put this little machine. It's just like a two kind of half rounds and then a wedge. And you just tap. And it gets deeper and deeper until the stone just cracks. And they still do that today. But they were moving on. This is, you know, 1880. I mean, they had a little bit of steam power. But they're swinging 80,000-pound pieces of stone around to put on barges. I mean, you know, humans did crazy shit. So sound, I mean, I would say that if he was using sound, maybe, I mean, the sonic boom is real. I mean, there's a force to it. Uh-huh. You can certainly like, you know, rupture eardrums. I think that stuff in Cuba, where all the diplomats got sick. I think that was very possibly a sonic attack that can, you know, create waves and disruption in your brain. I mean, it can create waves.
Well, do you think what's the Cuba thing called, Willie? You know it.
Havana syndrome.
So do you think that could be just from audio waves? Because the most recent thing I heard was that it was just a focused, some kind of energy that would like.
Well, so I would say that all, like whether it's sound, laser, like whatever, we're talking about like the similarity of non-particulate force.
Yeah.
So I think there's something there, but the idea that this guy could build something that no one would hear or be affected by, and that would be two little cones that he could.
Dude, I feel so stupid right now. The amount of time we've talked about this Coral Castle guy, and I've never said that would be loud. I've never once thought about how loud it would be. It's like audio. It's audio wavelengths. I've never thought about it. I mean, this guy's kind of busted. Like, we don't give him too much credence. All right, maybe Willie does, but like, it is interesting to then get into the Havana syndrome and like the non-particulate weapons, which is like basically the future. It's like which one are we going with? You know, Willie, you got more to show? Is that what you're doing?
Yeah, I wanted to show these just all these megalithic structures where like. Let's see. This is in Peru, where like each stone is cut in such a way that it's perfectly fits in this one spot.
This was Bill Wynn. I mean, like, are we not thinking about just like erosion and settling and like?
Well, but like
maybe now that it looks perfect, it's been 100 years. You know,
if you look at these little like, there's no gaps anywhere in this construction, and if you look at, they always have these little corners that cut in here were like, okay, this
weird. Yeah. It's like a weird, you wouldn't do
was
that.
Cut. This type of building I think is found in a lot of places all over the world. And I wanted to show you this because even the Egyptian pyramids, the top of the Great Pyramid shows
click
you.
On it. Click on it. It can't get smaller than it is now,
but it's over. Okay. So it shows you these, these
where
pyramids
was, like,
used to
perfect,
be. Encased with this other limestone that all fell away. Some theories are that they mined all this stuff and built other things somewhere else. Some theories are that the water level was up here, and so that's why that didn't go away at some point. But underneath the encasing stones, which were all flat, and they think that they were painted in bright colors, underneath that,
it looks like shit.
The same way that each, yeah, right. Each, oh gosh, damn it. Each fucking piece of stone, in the same way that that Peruvian thing was cut, each stone fits perfectly in their spot. And then they built on top of it. And so it's like, whatever technology it was, it feels the same.
But hang on. And I'm not discounting any of that. But we've all seen the people who make like stained glass windows, and they just kind of like find the perfect piece that kind of like fits in there, right? Or even like those rock art things where they just like put rocks together, and like if you wait long enough, you always find a new rock, right?
Yeah. But also in that same vein, if that were the case, like they're saying, I don't remember the numbers, but anytime I hear it, it's like, oh, that would mean they would have to put one of these 2-ton blocks in place every 30 seconds, you know, for the time that they said it was built.
But the whole, it's weird for me when you talk about time, because you don't believe that their timing is right. And so to use that as like a, it's got to be every 30 seconds, but you believe these were there longer before. So that kind of throws it out the window. And I'm not confronting you about it. I just think like, yeah, could this have taken, my idea is ridiculous that they just found stones that fit. That's ridiculous. But I feel like it's less ridiculous than that they were cutting weird shapes.
Well, so the Peruvian ones are a better example of this, but some people think that the reason why there's so many weird cuts in it is this thing will never move. They're like earthquake proof because there's so many different cuts that it basically turns it into a solid structure instead of a bunch of bricks, you know, a bunch of stones just stacked on top of each other.
Okay.
But sure. Why wouldn't they be able to figure that out? I mean, I would just have you go look at, you know, what the Masons were doing in the cathedrals for hundreds of years. They didn't have, they had the wheel. They didn't have much more technology than you know, they didn't have steel. And they built those things for hundreds. I mean, passed them on for hundreds of years just thinking about like, why wouldn't an Egyptian be able to do what a 13th century Irishman could do? Mm-hmm. Look at the flying buttresses of Notre Dame take it out of this like misto realm of, it was so long ago, they must have had nothing. I mean, they had basically the same thing that we had until the steam engine, gasoline, electricity, and nuclear power. Like everyone was kind of on the same playing field forever in a way, you know? So if we could figure out how to make a cathedral, why couldn't we figure out how to make a pyramid or a wall in Peru? When it was like of prime importance to make it, when that was like the best job, that was the, you know, space going to space job that.
Yeah, for sure. Like whoever those builders were definitely could have been idolized, you know, like the Masons that built any of these cathedrals, they definitely kept those secrets within themselves. Like, yeah, we'll handle the building of the cool shit. Like you can build your shitty house, it's going to fall over.
Yeah.
So I believe
but the question remains, like, and we need to wrap it up. But like, I think the question is, what is the interest in that these people couldn't do it? It feels like we could do it. I know that it keeps being said we can't make the pyramids, but I feel like we could. If we had 1,000 years, we could make the pyramids, right?
Yeah. And, you know, definitely, I don't have a picture of this, but one of the craziest things about the pyramid, too, is that, like, over, let's say, what we think it's like 5,000 years old, it hasn't sunk at all. No, they'll build buildings today that sink and they've got to pump them back up because the foundation stones underneath the pyramid, those are the ones I always bring up because those are way bigger than, so like if you think, yeah, well, they could move the pyramid stones factory style, sure, bunch of people, slave workers going to town. The stones that the pyramids sit on are so big that that blows everything out of the water. And that's something
that's a mystery in itself, right? Because then then it's like, how did this get here? But it's the end cut.
Also,
that, right?
Those stones, the tops are cut, right? But underneath them, it's like they built them onto the ground that was there because there's like, it's just sitting on rocks. It's not flat.
So like the same kind of the same kind of weird intricacies where they place the stones that meet each other. They did that with the floor.
Yeah.
So you're standing and it's not rocking. We've all stood on a rock and it rocks back and forth because it's right. I mean, like it's real fun as a kid.
To me,
crossing a river or whatever.
Whatever the technology is that's lost, that's why I always think liquefaction of the stone in some way. How did they get it flat on top?
And then remolding it?
Yeah, yeah. That's what I think. I think some, that's why I say sound, but it doesn't have to be sound, but somehow the bottom is fits the environment that it's sitting on and the top is flat and it's huge.
Were they at a point where they could create like a mold? Like, let's say that they can liquefy stone and pour it into a mold. Were they at the point where they could make a mold that's perfectly flat and like right angles and stuff?
Yeah. Yeah.
So okay. Maybe so
like some
heat.
Kind of concrete. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if you could, I mean, the way that you liquefy stone, the way you make glass, right, is
right.
Lightning hits this beach and you can turn it into glass. Mm-hmm. So maybe they had a connection to a lightning strike.
Or even just mirrors.
No.
Sun,
no. You're so close to agreeing with Willie. Tesla said that the water under the earth or whatever is like making.
Yeah, you could
Tesla
if you could get if
like,
you could actually turn the rock into lava for a second.
Yeah,
it
they
would
had
totally.
Yes.
If you had enough heat that you brought maybe like I don't know a dragon from Middle Earth or. A Thor would come down and help you, but you could like just melt the rock in place.
Right. It's like they wait for the
or
storm.
They know-
there's one guy with this with a big rod. Okay.
I think it's like what if they created nuclear fusion or I don't know which would be we haven't created whatever, it doesn't matter. What if they created it, but whatever the A-bomb is made of, right? Like that
fission,
combination of fission. Okay. What if they created that, but they just used it to melt rocks? And that's why it's lost. Because someone said, this could be a weapon. And like, we need to stop doing this. In my world.
That sounds like a great tag off of, yes, I like where this has ended up. How do we melt rock? How do we went from how is this bowl so cool to how
Welcome
do
to
we
the
melt the base of rocks to make the pyramids? We're going to have an atomic bomb. The Egyptians had atomic bombs. It wasn't aliens. All right.
Yeah. I don't
they
like
melted
the
rocks.
Stuff.
Fuck the aliens. Fuck the aliens.
They melted rocks.
We got to give humanity more credit than aliens. All these people who say aliens, I'm like, come on. Have you ever woken up and not wanted to get out of bed, but you get out of bed? That's humanity. We can do it. We can make pyramids. You don't need aliens.
Just carve it with your finger.
Go hey, get man. those triangle the ice cream cone stones that I left out back.
I know
those are powerful.
The Egyptians
would be beside themselves.
Egyptians would be beside themselves if we knew there was a job, or if they knew there was a job where you stand in a store and people come and tell you that they want this, and then you take things from them and give them that thing. They would be like, "What? Why?" So it's just a different. There was the cashier of our time. Is the intricate rock carver of their time.
Right. Maybe that should be a show.
Thankless.
What our world would look like to an Egyptian.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
We can just watch Bill and Ted for that. Let's just watch Bill and Ted. Nice. All right. Let's wrap it up. Priscilla, thank you so much for being here. The book is called Tips for the Dark Art of Manipulation. I want to get it. It's on Amazon, right? You can get it on Amazon.
Yeah. Sure.
It's Priscilla Elliott, and the movie that's out that is probably on VOD right now. You should check it out. It's called Strange Darling. And, dude, thank you so much for being here. I think your point of view is great, and we're going to continue this conversation. Do you want to plug anything else, or are you good? You want to throw out your Twitter?
I'm good.
You need some followers?
So my gram, what is my gram? Let's see. I think it's Sneechy P.
Need to pee.
Sneechy pee. Oh. Like a Sneech, like a Dr. Seuss Sneech.
Yeah.
SNEECHYP.
So yeah, gram me up.
Oh, I wasn't following you. You
could just get on that. Let's get on that. I don't use Instagram or else I don't know where my phone's at. I'd follow you. I need to promote my YouTube reaction channel that Eric and I just launched. It's called First Time. I think Willie's going to provide some links. I could say the address. You'll never find it. First Time Reaction Channel. You can't Google it. It's impossible. So look for our links. Go to reallifesci-fi.show. It'll be in there eventually. And Willie, what do you got?
You know, follow Willie Bad Movies on Instagram. Make fake movie posters every week, and one day we'll make them for real.
Are you still doing that every week?
Yeah.
Wow.
They're hilarious.
I'm gonna start putting Moose in some because he's ready to start making stuff or creating.
I just assumed you had already. How did you do Garfield without Moose?
I've thrown a couple, but he wants to start coming up with some. The one he came up with recently was the man couldn't ever stop pooping. I'm like, okay, I'll come up with some of that.
No, just use that. Don't fucking no. So you need to do a sub column that's just his ideas. I think just unfiltered. Don't make it all yours, because the man who couldn't stop pooping is like an amazing idea. It's amazing. You don't have to punch that up. You're done. All right. Sorry. So thanks everyone for listening. Patreon.com/reallifesci-fi. And remember that just because you're paranoid doesn't mean they're never after you. We'll see you next time.
Bye.